Welcome to Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. Today we have Sabina Gonzalez-Araña, who is a local political expert, and we have Tal Eslick, who is the owner of Vista Consulting. Welcome to the podcast, both of you.
Thank you.
And today we're going to talk about Fresno impacts of Trump's first 2 weeks, and what better way to kick it off than talking about immigration. And Sabina, I want to talk to you first. So a common refrain I hear from a lot of local Republicans I've talked to over the last month, 2 months or so, who have supported Trump but don't necessarily like his immigration policies, they'll say, look, every president deports, deportation is common. Obama was the deporter in chief, is a thing that people say. What's your response to that? And how would you compare the rhetoric and some of the early policies that we've seen in the first 2 weeks? How did that compares with Biden and Obama?
I would say that's true. It's true that all the presidents, all these Democratic presidents also deport, and they also have pretty harmful and ineffective border policies. So that's true, I think, across the board. And I'm from the border, so I've gotten to see that, unfortunately, pretty close up. But I would say that the difference is that it's one thing, the mechanism and the day-to-day logistics of deporting people is very different than unleashing a whole wave of white nationalist hate. Because then what you do is your whole culture and public discourse changes into one that's terrifying for people, such that now farm workers aren't showing up to work, such that students can't focus at school, such that parents don't know if they should take their kids to school. And I think for me, what that does is that creates, in a country that's already super polarized, it creates even more polarization. And it really undermines, in our region especially, because we have so many farm workers that are the foundation of our economy, that when you create a situation where they're not showing up to work, and it just undermines our business as usual, right? And that's what we probably don't want to do. And I'm responding just in cold policy, like economic terms. Obviously, what I think as a person, as an immigrant myself, and as a person who has friends and loved ones that are immigrants, is that it's not the right thing to do to terrorize my community and children in it and elders and people who've all they've done is work their whole lives and done the best they can to care for their community and each other. I feel like that's morally wrong and gross and disgusting. And if I were a person who didn't care about that and only cared about making another dollar, this doesn't help us. This actually, our economy in this region and in the city of Fresno is already so tattered and eroded. And the last thing we need is to undermine it even further.
Yeah, so I guess what you're saying is the ideology and the rhetoric attached to it creates this additional layer. What about the unpredictability, the chaos that we're seeing?
Yeah, the chaos doesn't help us who are regular working people trying to make a living. It doesn't help any of us because, again, it just erodes our culture and our discourse even more. But it does help people like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos. It does help people who are already billionaires, but who would still run over their own mother to make another dollar. So that's who it very clearly helps.
Mm-hmm. Tal, there's been a lot of reaction already in the agriculture industry, especially reacting to especially the raids in Bakersfield that we saw a few weeks ago. Casey Creamer, California Citrus Mutual, Daniel Hartwig, California Fresh Fruit Association, that are vocally calling on Trump to halt and be more specific in how they target people, making sure they're only going after violent criminals. I'm curious what you're hearing from a lot of the folks you work to in the business community and why you think the administration hasn't necessarily responded to that pressure from people that are seen as allies.
So every morning I usually get an email from Charlie Kirk and he tells me what to believe that particular, I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding.
No, I did not believe you,
thank you. I'll admit, I'm probably more agnostic about more issues than I ought to be. And a lot of that's just the background. It's the nature of our work. We work with a number of clients, mostly in the business space, although in the nonprofit space as well. I'm very resistant to becoming emotional about things either way, because I see both sides. If it's not that simple anymore, but I see people do that often where they'll play upon people's emotions on any number of issues. And I think you can find examples of that in the immigration debate on both sides. During my time working in Congress for Congressman Valadao, we were one of the more active members, certainly in the Republican Party on this particular topic, and had any number of, I think, completely disingenuous conversations with his counterparts from other places in the United States that had absolutely no understanding, I'm pretty sure had never interacted with anyone from Mexico in their entire lives, but had very strong opinions about immigration, usually completely misguided opinions, right? So I will say the last couple of weeks, the rhetoric has actually been less, I think, passionate and aggressive than I would have guessed. If you had told me the weeks leading up to the election, hey, the Trump administration with ICE is going to have some pretty aggressive enforcement measures, I would expect there to be effectively a civil war in our country. I don't feel like that's happened. There are people, I think, with an important opinion and have an experience in this issue that are very passionate about it. I think that's very reasonable. I've been surprised. I know there was Casey Creamer, who's a good friend. The citrus industry, I know they've indicated concerns. I have not heard, and I'll say anecdotally because it's not about any one particular client, I have not heard in with any significance the agriculture business community raising concerns yet. Again, I've heard stories about people being very scared. I've heard stories about people being concerned. Much of that seems to be coming from the nonprofit community. I think folks that are advocates for that population, and I would expect that to be the case. I do think most farmers are very passionate. They're tied to their land and have deep history in our community. But assuming the worst ones that are simply out to make money, I don't think they would be shy about expressing concern about the lack of labor as a result of ICE's actions in the last few weeks. I'm not hearing that much.
So you think those claims have been overstated, those large percentage of workers not
I don't know that they're overstated. I assume that anyone who feels that way, I don't think that they, I shouldn't say, I think there are people whose job it is to get any group of people whipped up about any number of issues. I also think there's people that have deeply held opinions and experience, and I think both can be true, right? Oftentimes we are hired by interests to whip people up and in order to get them to act a certain way, policymakers more often than anybody else. So I don't think anyone's in beyond that. I do think there are folks who are wishing this was a clearer thing for the industries that rely on agriculture. Sorry, the agriculture being one of the industries that rely on largely undocumented labor, and the hospitality industry, the service industry, and agriculture. And I don't feel like we're hearing that as much as I would have expected if it was as disruptive as some folks are saying that it is. But I'm not as well versed in it either. It sounds like you're much closer to it too. I'm learning more even just sitting here this afternoon.
Yeah, that's interesting. I know I hear we're hearing a lot from local schools about kids not attending, not showing up. So it is having impacts, but it's interesting to hear who is starting to say something and who's waiting and seeing. So another question I have is, depending on who you talk to, and like you said, Tal, very, very polarized issue, clearly. Some people I'll talk to feel like Trump's direction on immigration is very ominous, that we're in 1933 Germany, that we're at the, when some people are very confident that we're at the precipice of a grand bargain on immigration reform, just very wide perspectives. And you have Japanese Americans in some parts of California that are organizing people to help remember internment and how the same policy that was used for internment, Trump has also said he might invoke to carry out deportations. So I'm just curious how you feel like we are on this very vast spectrum where how is it that some people feel like we're in 1933 era Germany and some people feel like we're about to see massive amnesty happen at the same time?
Are you asking me or do you want to go ahead, Sabina?
Who wants to go first?
I can comment on that. I'm not like a historical expert or a Japanese internment expert or really like an expert in any of these things per se, but I have spent about two decades working in this community and with immigrant communities. And I would say that is possible. That does make sense that you could have very predatory and very terrifying immigration policy, even if some segments of the community don't see it because it's designed for you not to see it. Just like ironically in 1933 Germany, not everybody could see it because it was hidden from some and it was very obvious to others, depending on how close you were to the community being impacted. But I would say that it wouldn't surprise me if we were seeing these, how can I put it? Every time we've had amnesty, so like in 1986 or even other lesser forms of amnesty that we've seen, it's always at the expense. Something always has to pay for it, so to speak, right? If I'm going to give a couple of million people amnesty and give you all a path to citizenship, then someone has to pay for that. And those someones are usually people who are most vulnerable, right? They're people who are on the border waiting for asylum. They're children who are unaccompanied. They are people who can't speak up for themselves, and those are the people that will pay, right? So amnesty never comes for free. Amnesty always comes, someone's blood always has to pay for that. And so in 1986, what happened is that we saw amnesty for many of our colleagues and our peers that are walking around now with citizenship because of that amnesty. And there was also people like myself for whom the violence at the border was so pronounced and the effect of militarizing the border was so horrifying that we had no other option but to leave and to flee and to try to look for some other alternative. So those things are two sides of the same coin. And so it doesn't surprise me that you'd have a very like fascistic sort of immigration policy, because ultimately what amnesty will probably look like at this point, and you can see it just like in the rhetoric and in the discourse about this issue, it'll end up looking like we want to legalize your arms and legs when it's convenient for us because we need your labor. But when we're done with that, the other 6 months of the year, you can leave. And if you don't leave, we'll punish you for that. And we'll punish everyone else who doesn't fit into that little box, if that makes sense.
I want to put a pin on something you said early there, which I think how segregated our cities are and how separated things are. And then I think the Trump administration understands that if you watch someone get picked up in an ICE raid, it's something that's not popular. Things. It's not popular. And so it feels like it's something they want to keep separate from people's eyes.
I'll tell you this. You're absolutely right. So I just saw a video before coming here of attempted deportation or attempted pickup from ICE. And it was in Phoenix. And they were driving a tank, like a literal tank, into a house. And all the neighbors were outside like, what is this? So you're right. When people actually see what it means, they don't like it, because what decent person would think that's okay, right? And the other thing I'll share with you is that, yeah, it's very present, especially for school children. My daughter goes to a dual immersion school. She is in fourth grade. And the first week that they were back from winter break, she cried every single day, not for herself, because she knows that I'm a citizen. I've been a citizen since 2019. She cried because her friends in her classroom were crying because they were so scared and their parents didn't really know whether it was safe to bring them to school, that she's afraid. She's like, all my friends are scared. They're shaky. They don't want to come to school. They're scared for their parents. And whether or not that ends up, their deportation actually ends up happening or not, the harm is done to those students. And her school is like 90% immigrants. So, of course, that's going to be felt differently than if I go to school in the foothills or somewhere else.
Yeah. Tal, what's your take on all of this?
Yeah, I think we're at a time, especially in the last couple of weeks, obviously, with the new Trump administration, that a bunch of institutions are being flipped over, right? So whether it's immigration, whether it's, you can broadly say, healthcare, potentially like our engagements overseas, certainly trade. And it's really disruptive. And there are any number of individual stories, very problematic. As I was walking in, USAID is being questioned, and there's now lists of programs that exist that one by one are being picked apart on Twitter, whatever else. I'm sure someone will hire someone kind of like me to tell a very compelling story and protect that particular budget in the case of whatever federal program. Ultimately, I do think we need to start with what is status quo and is it working? To draw another example, in the healthcare space, there's a lot of folks, there's a lot of pearl clutching around RFK Jr. How in the world could he ever be put in a position like Health and Human Services? My God, he will be so disruptive and problematic for the United States as it relates to our health and the health of our young people, specifically on vaccines is probably the one that you hear most about. It's not going terribly right now. Like, status quo is not okay. It's hard for me to be in both places at the same time that, oh my God, we cannot disrupt these institutions, but also they're going so poorly. Immigration in our country has not gone terribly well for as long as I've been keeping track of it, I suppose. In the last 4 years have been really problematic from just a sheer number of people crossing the border. If that's what we are as a country want to be status quo and to remain, I don't know that as many folks would have been as supportive of President Trump returning to the White House. So I do think there was a message, at least nationally, that this issue needs to be reined in. Many polls, it showed up as one of the top issues. That's not always the case. There's been many a time where immigration was nowhere near the top, even just the time that I was in politics, the 10 years, right? It's always towards the top for the districts I worked in, because Congressman Valadao's district was 70-some-odd% Hispanic, so it was more of a topic, and certainly the agriculture influence and all that. So point being, I think things are disruptive. It's going to be uncomfortable. I don't know that directionally, as a country, we've decided what we want. What do we want immigration to look like? Do we want a border that folks just pass based on market conditions or fleeing sometimes for different reasons? We don't really know who's there. We send folks back haphazardly. It's a big mess. It's uncomfortable. Is that what we're trying to protect? Or, and I think this falls on policymakers, should we pass laws and then enforce them that make sense? And if they're the wrong laws, people always forget, politicians, it's a choice. Whatever issue, our folks that are elected to these positions have a choice to make. We act like they don't, like they can't work together. They can't work together. That's, we get the government we deserve. They could fix immigration. They could make the door bigger, or they could make the wall shorter, whatever it's going to be. And they choose not to. They choose to have a broken system for decades that's super poorly managed, and we just allow it to happen, right? So
I think, you worked in Congress with a Republican congressman who was committed to immigration reform in some way.
I'd say as much or more than any other Republican in the United States.
And what was the barrier that you saw stick up the most when you were in Congress?
I'd say in the Republican delegation, it was this acknowledgement that many of these folks lived here and had built their lives here and were providing a very important value to our country, balancing that with the fact that they were providing them amnesty. If I'm being generous, there was this feeling that if you provided them amnesty, as it happened a few times in our history, it would not be met with fixing immigration long-term, and you'd just be back in 20 years doing amnesty again. I think that's like a fair perspective, because that's in fact what's taking place. On the Democratic side, I think it was like a lot of debates in Washington, absolutism on the part of many progressives in the Democratic Party. They just wanted amnesty. They wanted nothing else. It was just two sides, I think both fairly ill-informed, with the American people somewhere in the middle, and we end up with a broken institution I feel like that's status quo. That's where we've arrived, right? It's no different than the gun debate. No guns, everyone gets a gun, and then we just end up bumbling through life and things keep happening. And
that part's right. The bumbling is right.
I think our immigration system is bumbling. I don't know how you could define it as anything else. Just not purposeful. We have laws, some of them enforced sometimes. Some people come into office, we enforce them more. Some others come into office, we enforce them less.
The point, you've opened so many doors I want to walk through. I don't even know where to start. I feel like that one point, though, about the status quo being flawed, I don't think we would find, I'd struggle to find one person around here that disagrees with that. I think everyone agrees that the status quo doesn't work. Again, I'm from the border, and I could see very close up that this wasn't working. However, if the alternative to that are internment camps with children in them and families in them, I don't think that works better. I don't think under any circumstance, and I think speaking to colleagues of mine at work whose parents were interned in the Japanese internment camps, they have been the ones to help me see that, right? That these were the same arguments, that this was the same conversation that was being had when those camps were erected the first time, which was, you know, we've got to do something, right? The status quo doesn't work, so we've got to fix it. And the way we fixed it is by absolutely terrorizing and traumatizing people, which we then had to come back and apologize. And by we, I don't mean me. I just mean the federal government had to come back and apologize. And knowing that, not even just from internment camps, not even as far back as that, but knowing that's effectively what happened during Trump's first administration, why would we then want to go back for more of that when we've seen the impact that it has, when we've seen that it didn't fix anything, and when we've proven that, in fact, it made things worse? It didn't. So it's like you're not solving any problems, but you're causing new ones.
The internment, I've heard you guys bring this up a couple of times. Is this happening?
Detention camps.
Sorry.
Privatized detention camps.
In Japanese internment, I think it was American citizens who like went to their homes.
There are American citizens in immigrant detention centers. They're being picked up by ICE. This is not a secret. It's been widely reported.
I would hope no one would be. So these are American citizens that are being detained?
Yes, detained and held. Why indeed? But even if they weren't American citizens.
Like a broad net that pulls
right,
but in
even
a lot
if they weren't, yeah. But even if they weren't, even if they weren't, if we know that the status quo is flawed and the status quo that we move towards is one where, again, people are picked up indiscriminately, children are jailed, you have unaccompanied children who are in court by themselves trying to defend themselves with no legal representation. That doesn't work. That's not what we want.
I think American citizens being detained by ICE, I hope that no one would, I don't know why that would, other than just accidentally, I would hope that we shouldn't, I have no reason to believe that should happen. My God. That
seems I believe what happened
But the in other parts are okay.
I believe what happened in Bakersfield a few weeks ago when there was the raid is that there were a few citizens that were arrested, and then once they were taken to for processing and their
But that tells you something. That right, tells exactly. you that the basis through which they were picked up was not about I'm on a list because I'm a criminal. Because if that were the case, then you wouldn't be haphazardly bumbling around picking up people who shouldn't be picked up and terrorizing everyone around for no other reason than you feel like you should.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that that seems awful. American citizens being
I think the broader point yeah. about the Japanese internment experience though is that Trump has been quoted saying that he wants to be able to invoke, I believe it's the Alien Enemies Act.
Yeah, the Insurrection Act.
Right.
Or Alien and Sedition Act.
The same act that was used to legitimize Japanese internment during World War II.
Yeah, referring to immigration as an invasion in a military sense.
And he says that, and then he also says he wants to have a plan to support Dreamers, so it's just this constant chaos of you just don't know what the next...
Well, it's chaos if you don't pick up on the storyline, right? It's chaos if you can't pick up on the through line of you're picking up on the desperation of people because they are one paycheck away from being evicted. They're in student debt, medical debt. They can't afford to live, right? They just cannot afford to live in this country. Their lives are falling apart and they need somebody to be mad at. And if you want to pick somebody to be mad at, pick the person who can't defend themselves. That is the oldest trick in the book. And if we're willing to believe it about immigrants or about Black people or about whoever, just fill in the blank, then that's a story that's being told. That's what we're being sold. But it's not actually solving our problems. Like, it doesn't help me buy cheaper eggs or get cheaper gas, or it doesn't help me pay down my student loans. It just makes me a dumbass.
Yeah, let me pull on a little thread here, because we're talking about compromise, coalition building, trying to solve immigration at a legislative level. It seems like Trump's messaging is the opposite. He's looking for arcane statutes and legal precedents in order to do things with executive action, which seems to go in the opposite direction of coming up with a long-term legislative solution.
But they're not random, right? So Lake and Riley is not random. Trying to eliminate birthright citizenship, it's not random. The trying to go after birthright citizenship is about destroying the 14th Amendment. I feel like this has been widely reported. Like, it's not a random, let me just like desperately pick at something. No, it's like, how can I undermine civil rights that have been fought for over generations because I don't believe people should have them? Let's untangle that. Let's just undo it.
Not one to defend it, but I'm curious, because I don't know, what do you think? I mean, do you think the motivation is literally like the 14th Amendment? We've got to unwind that. Like, that's what he's trying.
Yeah, as a piece of a broader thing, which is the civil rights movement fought for these things, and those need to be undone. Yeah. I don't feel like that's a secret, right? Pretty broadly stated in the sort of far-right movement.
When I worked at PG&E, we had 2 years where we were part of some of the largest fires in California history that ultimately found to be the company's fault. I remember being approached by a lobbyist for the trial attorneys, and someone at PG&E had dropped limbs on his roses in his backyard. He lived in Davis. And he's like, I can't believe you guys did that. And I was like, listen, bud, we are not that good to do something that mean on purpose. In so many ways, I feel like our policymakers are the same way. I don't think, for the most part, they act with purpose. I think, for the most part, the government is this big, lurking disaster, and they just bumble from one... Gotta quit using bumble so much. They bounce from one disaster to the next crisis to the next thing. So I do think a large part, the Trump administration has chose to focus on immigration because American voters in many senses rewarded them for talking about that issue in higher numbers in the Hispanic community included. So I think they're reacting to, is that not true? I
mean,
I think
that's,
I don't, that's not an opinion. I think they've performed
that is
better.
An opinion. That is an opinion. And I'll tell you how I think that.
So Trump did worse with Hispanic voters in 16 than
Trump did worse with the United States than he did last time. So as a whole, 13 million less people participated in this election. Turned out 13 million less people turned out this time than last time. And that's not me making it up. That's just the truth. So the biggest statement we could make about 2024 is that people walked away because they could not fathom option A or option B. That is
the biggest story. That's not just Trump's fault.
No, I'm just saying that is the big looming piece overall. Trump himself lost, 2 million? I don't remember. 2 million vote. He got 2 million less votes than he got last time, right? This whole thing about the mandate is also a little tricky. And a lot of those 13 million people, a lot of those 13 million people were Latinos, right? And then if you go further into it and break down what Latinos voted for who, you can see that it was very specific segments of the Latino population that voted for Trump, right? Certainly no one around here, mostly. The vast majority of people who are, for example, Mexican-American, voted for Kamala Harris. I don't want to go into that rabbit hole, but my point is that we have to be mindful of the story we're telling about, well, Trump won and he's got this mandate. No. People just aren't participating because this is a disaster. So let's, like, the whole mandate thing just makes my...
So I guess to be fair then, is there any acknowledgement that maybe this issue is more cross-cutting than just simply...
No, absolutely. Okay. It is. This is a cross-cutting issue. Everyone wants this issue to be fixed. However, if I tell you, Danielle, that I'm going to go to your house and fix your roof, but instead I blow it apart and now there is no roof, that's not me solving your problem. That's just me making it worse. So yes, everyone wants to solve the problem of immigration, but right now we're just making it worse. That's all that's happening right now.
So last week we saw an OMB memo go out through a leak in the Washington Post. Then it was rescinded. Then it was clarified from the press secretary that it was still, the freeze was still in effect of federal funds. I think now we have 2 injunctions in place. It's been a legal journey for anyone who's a recipient of federal funds. And locally, we did a story about it at Fresnoland last week. A lot of local public agencies are really scrambling still to figure out what actually affects them, what doesn't. EOC has their Head Start programs federally funded, Housing Authority, et cetera. Chal, let's start with you. What local impacts have you seen from the freeze? And how should we interpret this very chaotic decision out of D.C.?
First of all, I don't want to be the one forced to defend everything the Trump administration is trying to do.
You're locally, such a perfect straw man. No, I'm just kidding.
It's just because I have a mustache. Locally, we've talked to folks and said, take a breath. Again, there was a lot of pearl clutching and, oh my God, the world's going to end, which it was almost all immediately gummed up in court, as tends to happen in our country. I think specifically on LGBT, DEI, and efforts that aid the undocumented community, there probably is cause for concern. Those are the issues that the Trump administration has decided to target, and it's going to be a rough go the next few years. I will say broadly, these, for the same reasons you have to, you know, change diapers, these programs need to be looked at. I think even if you acknowledge that in many cases, people of all political stripes would agree with the goals of many of these programs, the execution in many cases is a abysmal failure. So just if we were, the four of us were sitting around the table trying to find some solutions here, I'd love a world where we could crack open some program, say it's only $10 billion, dig in there, find out what's working and double that and find out what's not working and cut it. Broadly,
I think
conceptually, yeah, that would be smart.
I think you're right. I think the question is how and who, because we're seeing these kind of
and what's the goal? What's
appointees
the actual goal,
that are right? Lacking some credentials that are being appointed to these secretary positions, and
that's all administrations.
But it's not, because it's also super naive to think that all of this chaos is just so random, right? There is no rhyme or reason to this chaos. I am just a T-Rex in a china shop, and there's no rhyme or reason. That's not true, because there is rhyme or reason. Some people are being punished and some people aren't. So this whole thing about these are problems, there's a problem, people storming the Capitol and defacing federal property and attacking law enforcement officers. But those people get a second chance. They can get pardoned. They very specifically and intentionally get a quote-unquote second chance. So somehow those folks are supposed to be up on a pedestal, while the lady that takes her kids to school every day and, like, cooks for a living and caters or whatever and just trying to eke by, that person I'm supposed to be mad at. Like, it's just, it's not random.
It's
Elon Musk, an unelected buffoon, on top of my personal information, giving him access to
I apologize for not being more partisan about these things, but it's also very naive to think that this administration is somehow more political or more willing to help their friends than the last. My God, like it's...
You've seen Elon Musk.
I saw our former president pardon his whole family and all his friends right before he left office.
Those I don't think anyone's equal, innocent. But are those two things on an equal, right? Like, dude, some Biden dude getting pardoned doesn't bother me. What bothers me is that Elon Musk now has access to these payment systems and all our personal information. That seems to me a little more serious.
And I would find it just as scary and offensive than any number of random bureaucrats who we don't even know what the their agenda is have access to it or lose access to it. Or the amount of waste, and I think this should be offensive to everyone in the in our country, because it's a misuse of resources. If we're tackling education, you mentioned the public school, the amount of gross waste that takes place in education, we should all get behind. That shouldn't even be controversial. I'm asked to pay for tissues in my daughter's class, ink for the printer. Why is that not on the list of things that are provided as part of what I pay as my taxes? So again, like the, certainly the rhetoric, and I think some of the chest beating that's including from this batch of billionaires in this administration, not the last, I think it's a bit much, but I would hope that we could look into these programs, audit, whatever you want to call it, because there's so much money that's going to places it shouldn't go and being diverted away from where it should. And that, I hope there's enough there that people of all stripes can get behind that.
Do you really believe that Elon Musk is there to look into these programs and make them run more effectively? That's his goal?
I don't know what his goal is at this point, because I feel like when you've got that amount of resources, I don't even know what your motivations look like anymore, because you
couldn't
spend...
Power, probably, more than likely.
If we're
and
gonna,
that's a very different goal than
fixing
systems.
No, if we want to do that, we can do this kind of dance. If you're the left's favorite billionaire and you're funding efforts to elect more progressive DAs, I don't know what your motivation is. Maybe it's control. Maybe it's something more nefarious. I could not tell you what's in the mind of a billionaire. I've never knowingly talked to one. Actually, one guy in Bakersfield is a billionaire. He made drill bits. He was a pretty nice guy.
Well,
but I don't know what these guys
if the
keeps
point
them up
is
at night.
To prevent... The waste of taxpayer dollars and resources. It's just It's.
But you would agree with that. But that is like a
right. But
everything
effort. That I'm seeing just in the short time of this administration is doing the opposite of that. For example, I'm going to sign into law the Laken Riley Act, right? As if federal and local law enforcement entities weren't already bursting at the seams with things to do. As if they could possibly take one more stupid thing to do that accomplishes nothing. Now we're going to make them use their spread their resources even more by picking up people who haven't even been convicted of crimes. Like I said that you stole a pack of gum, so now ICE is going to come get you. Such a waste of resources for an agency and for local agencies that already are, like I said, they're already spread super thin. And now we're going to waste their time even more.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
I agree about the government waste. I see it's transparent. I think the challenge is how to make cuts and who makes the cuts and what's the purpose of the cuts and can we trust the due diligence of looking into these very complicated programs and making cuts in a way that won't hurt people. I think that's the challenge, obviously, and I don't know if I trust its administration to do
that. And again, it's not
effectively.
Random.
Yeah,
it's always the same people that get hurt. It's not random.
I think you could look at any number of government programs. As to who makes the decisions about where the money goes, I think there will be legal challenges on what the administration can do versus Congress. Congress has the purse strings, so in theory, they're the ones that are directing spending. We elect those members of Congress, so that's informed by the electorate. I think there is people don't realize the power of the American bureaucracy and the amount of money that is wasted. And I know it's easy, we can all pick on waste, but it's, for example, with USAID, there was a PBS story or NPR that came out about it just probably 3 months ago. Such and such amount of money gone to those efforts. The amount that goes to third-party administrators, which are private companies whose job it is to help move those dollars around, it was something like 70%, right? Looking at those things and just sunlight is really helpful for transparency, right? Showing the American people that, and if we want to spend those billions of dollars, let's make sure it's getting to those communities, in many cases overseas, that's noble, that's fine. But like status quo is it's being skimmed and wasted and paying for folks to sit at home and not work. That's all absolutely, I can say it with certainty, I see it, right? just asking people to come into the office is super disruptive. Giving people access to take a severance of 8 months, they're saying 5-10% of the workforce will just take it. I think that's okay. I hope we can all get around that part of it. Again, if it's determining priorities, that's a debate that should happen in Congress. I agree with that. I think the administration is going to overreach and get slapped back. But cracking these things open and evaluating their value and where they're effective, I hope we can all get behind that, even if it's to spend more money on the communities we're trying to serve and less on administration.
The end of every Fresnolandia, we share what we're loving this week, anything that's giving us joy in this particular week. I'll go ahead and start. I watched two movies, one that both had deep sadness but a lot of beauty in it. One was called Green Border, that follows a Syrian refugee family as they are dropped in Belarus, try to make it to Poland, and are just sent back across the border. And then another one that I cried through most of the way, called Sing Sing. It's about a theater group in a prison, in a maximum security prison in New York, where a lot of the actors are actually inmates in the facility. And I thought both of those were beautiful because what they do is they attach stories, right? Public policy can be very anemic, can be very like numbers and in the aggregate, but all these public policy decisions we make affect people, their individual lives. And I think sometimes we forget that when we're talking about these big problems. And I'm reminded of just last year we lost one of our great theorists of government and the way it can reduce people to numbers, James C. Scott, has this great book called Seeing Like the State, about how public policy can really reduce people and change people through the way we categorize and sort them. And so watching those two movies, while it was sad often, they're beautiful movies, and that's what was giving me joy this week. Sabine, what are you loving this week?
You gotta love a man that's mature enough to cry. So I love that. I would say, I'm trying to keep it not political, but I can't help myself. This week, I've been loving the videos of people who are harassed by ICE agents, but then they remembered their rights, and in some cases, really humorously. And I live for that. I live for people who have learned their lessons from Trump 1, and they're like, in these videos, and the ICE agent's like trying to be intimidating and mean, and they're just like, I choose not to answer your questions. There was like this girl who's like with her cute long nails and her lashes, and you could just see her lashes. She's, I choose to plead the Fifth Amendment. I am a U.S. citizen. It was just like the cutest, sweetest thing. And for something so terrifying, for my community at least, it's just nice to see people being able to stay in their bodies and having learned lessons. It gives me a lot of hope. So I'll do one more, though.
Okay.
One other one is my daughter really likes anime. So for the third time, we've been watching Airbender.
Oh, yes.
And it is so cute. It's just cute.
You're
sitting
big
there.
You're a big anime fan in my house.
Yeah, that gives me joy.
Tao, what about you?
I'll do a quick one and then another one. My daughter, I hope she's not listening to this podcast yet, she's getting an award at school tomorrow. Mm. I think it's for like citizenship, or it's like a general award of like good behavior. And she doesn't know, so she's going to be surprised, and my wife and I'll be there, and we're pretty excited about that. I will also say, I guess plugging the location where we're doing this at, I'd not walked into this building before. I've been across the street, obviously, and then the spot next door, but super impressed by what's just really, I didn't know. It was like walking into a random door and be like, oh my God, it was just, and the welding on the rail walking up was super impressive. But anyway, cool building. And
there's always a bar coming to the basement.
Is there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So is this open now? There's a bunch of, or is everything starting up here in this particular building?
Yeah.
A lot of people are building in the individual
there's
little
tea
suites.
Shop downstairs. There's a lot of different
things
in this building.
Yeah, there's probably 10 businesses in here.
Okay. Maybe. Shame on me for not making the trip more often, but I'll definitely be back. And I think it's always cool when folks spend more time down here, especially from the far off Clovis, but make the trip and check it out. I know I'll be back. So pretty neat.
We love that you're loving Sun Stereo. That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's super fun.
Donnie, what are you loving this week?
Citrus season, and so I make lots of lemon tarts, and I spend a lot of time baking.
Like from scratch?
Yeah. Meyer lemon tart is my favorite. I make little Meyer lemon tartlets.
You like the Meyer? You like the softer? Because Meyers are a little sweeter.
No, Meyer. It's Meyer, or what's the word? Meyer or bust.
Meyer or bust. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so I'm going citrus picking at Sumner Peck Ranch next weekend with some friends, and I'm very excited. They have a U-pick on the river, and so you get like river exploration.
And they have like blueberries in the summer, right?
I just was there yesterday.
Oh, you went? How was it?
Yeah, it's beautiful down there. It's a beautiful time to be on the San Joaquin River.
Oh, it's the best. I love it so much.
Yeah, I'm not making tarts, but I'm making limoncello with the peels of my lemons right now because I grow Meyers in my backyard, and it's my favorite thing to do.
It's like a Portlandia episode. What's going on?
I know.
Okay.
We are.
Is that what always is?
We are. This is unfortunately. All right.
Yes.
We are.
Sorry. This is Fresnolandia. Yeah. This has been Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom.
And this podcast was recorded at Sun Stereo Warehouse in downtown Fresno. Audio editing and mixing was done by Jordan Maddox. Our lead image comes from Vaughn Ballinan, and our song comes from Stateless Rat.